governors, but here are the people you need to look for, and here's what went on.
This is during the Marion affair. I think one of the things that may have contributed to the official response to the Marion lynching was the fact that I would say they were ashamed of the fact that Indiana had the kind of record it had. There was a point at which I think Emma Lou Thornborough may have mentioned, I'm not sure that she was the source, that there were more lynchings in Indiana than there were in Georgia at a particular time near the turn of the century. Certainly, I'm aware that that was a fact. I may not be ascribing it to the right author. And also, that we were still having lynchings that late in the century. There's another reason, too, and that is that this is in the aftermath of the D.C. Stevenson days, when the Ku Klux Klan really did seize the Republican Party. Dick Given, among others, tells that his father was not re-elected to Superior Court because he refused to make the kind of pledges that would secure endorsement by the Ku Klux Klan.
To try to reach some unanimity of opinion regarding the politics of the time, because they were dealing with the Ku Klux Klan and the Republican side of it. And at the same time, many of the prominent leaders in the black community appeared to be Republican.
Well, at that time, most people were Republican. Mm-hmm.
Their arguments went back to the seem to be the ties to the Lincoln prospects. And it looked as if they were beginning to get feelings that they're going to lose segments of the black community. And so they began to make arguments in those papers about handling the business as well as other politicians.
Well, that was another thing. There was a time at which Bailey and Ransom tried to establish a league, a voters' league, in which people would examine the parties and not be aligned to either party. And that, I think, you'll find definitely in a book that Emma Lou Thornborough did. I think it's Negro in Indiana After 1900 is the name of it. I don't think really they got much support in it, in the effort, but it indicates that thinking people were not going to be tied to the parties. I doubt seriously if my father really bolted the Republican Party to an appreciable extent. I don't know, but I think they were trying to be selective. And all I'm really trying to say is that once people woke up to what the Klan was and what it was doing, that there may have been that much impetus for a reaction for the Republicans to show that they really were not still following that line. I have in my possession a flyer that was published in November 1924 by the Imperial Wizard of the Ku Klux Klan in Indiana, where he was asking people to vote the Republican Party ticket because they had most of its candidates county, state, and national had adopted the principles. One of them was that they were going to support the Horse Thief Detective Association and that they were going to take away all private property, all private school property, and give it to public schools, and that, I don't remember all of the things, but basically it was anti-black, anti-Catholic, and anti-everything. It amazes me they thought they were being Christian, but it was a time where, well, I think it was a bad time as far as our history was concerned, and I think some other folk thought so. Of course, there never has been a time when all good people had any particular label. I'd indicate before my father was a member of the Indianapolis Bar Association, probably before I was born, but he was the only member when he died in 1940, and when they took Mr. Decided, they were going to show how liberal they were when they accepted Mr. Brokenborough. By that time, I guess that was 55, when I was still a law, still not admitted to practice, but the news put it on the front page that Brokenborough was the first black. And I wrote and they retracted it. And surprisingly, they retracted it on the first page too, so. But it wasn't so. And I don't think it was anything to be proud of one way or the other. Upstairs. The Vinton Pierce building is now replaced. There was a Weiss Delicatessen downstairs, and Sander Weiss was one of my father's clients. Sander Weiss, the man who, with the real good ham sandwiches, only he became Sanders after he sold Weiss in the name, and then he opened up again after the time it expired around the corner as Sander's Delicatessen.
Do you remember anything specifically about the
Yes.
How it was
arranged? Oh, yeah. It was on the back of the building up against the alley. Mr. Brokenborough, well, as you could go upstairs one of two ways. You could go up alley stairs, or you could go up the front stairs. Actually, the Vinton Pierce building were two buildings. I mean, they were, at least it was a building divided in half with a common stairway in the middle. I take it Ayers had partitioned it that way, so the people on the inside paid their rent, the inside half paid their rent to one set of folks and the others on the outside. If you went up the front stairs, you bore to the, as I said, there were center stairs and they went all the way up to the third floor, but my father was on the second floor. Yeah, wooden stairs. One flight of stairs, and then you came to the floor, and then you had another flight of stairs that went up to the third floor on the second, and you could, there were halls on either, or corridors on either side of the stairwell to the third floor. You go to the right and went all the way to the back. When you got to the back, the room, the reception room was a long room, the whole width of that half of the building. It may have been the whole, my thinking is the building was an L-shaped building, and so there was no left south half to the building at that point, because the stairs came up, the back stairs from the alley were iron stairs that you could see out the windows on the inside, the south windows. At that long room had windows at both ends, south and north. It had three rooms opening off of it. Mr. Brokenborough's was the south west room. Mr. Littlejohn's was the northwest room. My father's was actually had a door onto the hall which wasn't used. That was the I guess you'd have to say the Northeast as far as that suite was concerned. I think old Mr. Pierce was a lawyer, and his office was in that part of the building, I mean on that hall, but near the where the third floor stairs went up. The waiting room had two secretaries' desks side by side outside of Mr. Brokenberg's office, outside of his door, and wooden chairs for people who came to visit. Yes, my cousin Lillian Davis was my father's secretary as long as she's still living, until he died, and then she became Mr. Brokenberg's, not immediately. Her first job after my father died was for People's Funeral Home, and then Mr. Brokenberg hired her. There were a series of girls for Mr. Brokenberg, many of whom I'd have difficulty in remembering. There was an Adia Matthews, there was a Wilma Harvey, there was, I think, I can't tell you for sure all of them. When my father worked on a brief, he would hire other people for that purpose, and they worked nights, and one of those people was a woman who recently retired from the Department of Correction, Mary, starts with an A, and I want to say it's not Abrams, but I can't think what it is. I could find out, but at any rate, she was one who claimed to have worked for him in those times. As I said, there were a lot of them who worked as extras, but my cousin was his one secretary. My mother was his secretary before she married him. Nell Hayes. Yeah. Nellie Hayes. Nell E.S. from Richmond. My father and Mr. Richardson had a double wedding when they married. He had divorced his first wife. So Mr. Richardson was my godfather, and my brother's name was Cornelius Rapier Bailey, named after Mr. Richardson, and an attorney from Gary, who actually was a shirt-tail relative from Florence, Joe Rapier. Joe Rapier, in the relationship that way, my aunt, meaning my cousin's mother, married a man whose sister married a Rapier, and that was the family of Rapiers that had a Civil War congressman named Rapier from Alabama. That goes back a long way, but this Joe Rapier was out of that family, so he would have been a cousin to my cousin, but not really any relationship at all to my father. R.L. Now, most people called him that. That's where he signed himself. He didn't use the Rob. Well, I guess some people called him Robert, but I can't think who. R.L., that was all he ever used. He didn't, of course, like the lieutenant.
Was there anything that, was there anything in that reception room you remember, specific pictures or anything that lodges in your mind that you reflect?
Well, in the reception room there could not have been pictures because the walls were so taken, and you had doors. You had at least four doors off of it. There was a large table at the north window. Of course, that was across from the Fletcher, old Fletcher Trust, now American Fletcher building. And that table was an oak table. You might call it a library table, but it had many books on it. There were bookcases outside Mr. Littlejohn's store. As I've indicated before, the girls' desks were on the side near Mr. Brokenberg's office, and I'm sure there were no pictures there. My recollection is that, strangely enough, there was apparently a window that was curtained between Mr. Brokenberg's office and the waiting room. It was high in the wall, but why there had been a window, I can't tell you. And on the opposite side, there really wasn't much space to walk to get to these desks, because that's where file cabinets were. things were piled pretty high. In my father's office, he had two desks. The one against the hall wall was one with a roll-top desk and many things on it. And his, then there was an ordinary desk that, and also a, I mean, that he sat at with a swivel chair. He could, in fact, he used both desks. He could swivel around to the flat-top desk, and then he'd swivel around to the roll-top desk. His office was the smaller of the two, but he did have a window, as I've said, on the street. Now, Mr. Brokenberg's window was on the alley, and I guess Mr. Littlejohn had a window on the street. My father also had an oak couch. Actually, both the couch and the table, mission oak, you know, that kind of furniture, had come out of our living room. And as far as pictures on the wall were concerned, the one that I'm sure my father had was one of the Marion County Bar, I mean Indianapolis Bar Association. I've got it. It's not in very good shape. When I moved last, they knocked it off the wall and broke the glass, and the paper's kind of crumpled. But there's another copy of it in the probate courtroom here in just outside of Fowl's door. There was also a picture that was framed that was a cartoon that ran in the Chicago Defender of my father, a great big head and a little tiny body carrying a briefcase. I probably have that cartoon somewhere. Well, they had a number of, they had a series of prominent men of one way or kind or another, and I guess they, I can't think what there was, that there was a particular reason for that one, but I'm sure that Ransom and Brokenberg were both pictured at some time, because Mike Ransom gave his father's to, or at least lent it to the Black Expo one year. And I'm sure that Mr. Brokenberg still had his on his wall when, you know, in later years. He smoked a cigar. You know, I can't tell you. I can tell you this, that at one point I used to, well, two things. One, I used to use the band off the cigar as rings. And secondly, at one point, I got him to save the cellophane off cigars because I had learned how to make a, fold it in a particular way to make a belt. And I was saving the cellophane to make a belt, but I can't tell you what brand. Oh, yeah. Out up there, and, yeah.
He wore glasses?
Yes. At one point, his glasses were pinched on his nose. And when he died, they were... they had the earpieces, but they were rimless, sort of hexagonal shaped.
Would it have been on the pinch on the 1930s?
Probably. I'm pretty sure that that cartoon had the pinched glasses. He needed them to read. He needed them at all times. Everybody in my family wore glasses.
Now, how big a man did you say
he was? I thought he was a big man. But I think my mother is short, maybe 5'2 at the most, certainly less than 5'3, which leads me now to believe that probably he was not anywhere near 6 feet tall, say 5'8 or so.
Was he thin?
No, he wasn't thin. Brokenberg was lean. My father was not fat, but he was not. But he definitely was not a small man.
Brokenberg smoked?
As far as I know, not.
He wore glasses?
I am sure that Brokenberg wore glasses at the end and on some occasions. Now, whether he wore them all the time, I don't seem to recall that.
Was your father dark or light?
Dark. He was sort of copper-colored like an Indian, with high cheekbones. large nose and thick lips. He was not particularly a pretty man.
What was his manner of speaking?
Beautiful.
Was he a slow speaker, fast speaker, or can you say?
I can't tell you about the rate. He liked poetry. And from the beginning, I mean, he used to recite poetry to me, and with a great many inflections. He liked, among others, he liked Paul Laurence Dunbar's poems. And he spoke dialect well, but dialect was not, he was a classicist, is really what it was. He worried me when I was in high school because he expected me to translate Latin that he knew a whole lot better than I did. I never spoke Latin. It was all I could do sometimes to read it. I think he told jokes and was kind of I guess people were amused. He must have been kind of a spellbinder.
How does that relate to Broken Bow?
No, Broken Burr was a different type personality. He and his wife liked classical music, and she would call him up on the telephone and play a record to him, some symphony or an opera. Both of these girls played beautifully. One graduated, both graduated from Oberlin, and I think the oldest was a music major. Who? What'd you say? He was tall. Broken Burr was over 6 feet and somewhat lean and very, every inch a gentleman. I can't imagine his ever, even in fun, using a swear word. In fact, I don't think he had a great deal of humor. He was extraordinarily courteous. He always addressed me as young lady. He was dark. Broken Burr was, he wasn't black, but he was a dark brown. He had keen features. I remember having said something to him at one time. Well, I won't say that now, but he considered black honorable. And now I wish I could describe the voices. I would recognize it if I heard it. His was a melodious voice and probably higher pitched than my father's. But the thing that you'll always remember about Broken Burr was his courtesy. And as I said, my father was more earthy. For example, I think they'd been practicing maybe 10 years. And for fun, he invited Ransom and Broken Burr to luncheon at a restaurant on the avenue, probably Miss Lee's, though I couldn't swear to it. In any case, they went expecting a spread. And he reached down and he had a paper bag with him and pulled out three rolls. Well, it was significant because that's all they'd had for lunch many a time when they were first practicing, but they'd expected something better then. And then after they had tried to disguise their unhappiness with having been invited out to dinner for the rolls, then the food was brought out. But
Was your father,
you want to know, I don't really remember his doing it as an expletive of his own. I think he might tell a joke in which somebody mentioned hell or something of that kind. I would say probably that both of my parents were unhappy when I went off to college and came back saying damn. So, I mean, that happened to be the word that most people said. Right over there, Bethel AME. My father had been a Sunday school superintendent for Allen Chapel, and when he married my mother, she was already going to Bethel. So he changed his membership to Bethel, and that's where we were christened. He was a trustee. But my father was somewhat of a, I don't know how to put it. At any rate, he believed in religion, but he didn't believe too much in particular doctrine. So that I grew up with an insistence that I go to church every Sunday, but he didn't much care which church. So, or at least he let me decide which church. So that on occasion I attended churches with neighbors or other people, and I'm not sure really where I am now, but for a period of time I was Christian Scientist, and for another period of time I attended a junior church at Old Simpson Methodist Church. I went to Bethel with my parents, and when he didn't particularly like the minister, because they change, they'd visit Allen Chapel or wherever, but it was a matter that I had to answer if I didn't go to any church at all. There were three of us, however, I'm the only living child. The first child died when I was about a month old. He had pneumonia in infancy. And I was the second. And the third child was a boy who died in 1955. Actually, he was retarded and epileptic. And I think he died. He was born in 1924. So that my feeling is that my mother spent a lot of her time on him, and they just didn't have any other children.
Did he have a car during this time?
Who?
Your father.
A car? He had a number of cars. Possibly a Chandler. I don't know what a Chandler. Now, but he had a Chandler, and Uncle Dick had an Essex. What he may have had before that, I don't know. But my recollection is there were two Chandlers in succession. When he died, he had a big old, square top Buick.
Were cars important to him?
No, not particularly.
Is there any hobbies?
Practicing law. Okay. As he said, law was a hard mistress.
Yeah.
He worked nights. His office looked a lot like mine. Not the furniture, but the things being piled, and nobody should ever touch them, because if he wanted something, he could always dive in the pile and find just exactly what he wanted. He was not particularly a neat man. In terms of dress, clothes didn't mean anything to him. Mr. Brokenberg was always immaculate. My mother tried to be sure he was well-groomed when he went to court, and they tell the story on one occasion he reached in his pocket to pull out a handkerchief to mop his brow, and it turned out to be a baby diaper, and he told her never do that again. But she complained on other occasions that he had balls in his knees, which basically meant that his pants didn't have a crease. My uncles joked about the first time they saw him in Detroit, because he'd come with a straw suitcase. Typically, when he went to Chicago, he never quite had time to catch the train, and it would be leaving the station downtown when he would leave our house at 18th Street. My mother would drive him out to the 38th Street Monon station, and the train would be pulling out of the Monon station when he'd throw his briefcase to the porter at one car, and he'd get on at the last one and wave his hat. Jack, kind of a jaunty figure. It was difficult to live with him in that respect, but no cars didn't mean anything to him. Things didn't mean anything to him. He did drink. Possibly he drank to excess. He never beat my mother. He didn't fuss with her. And when he got exasperated, I could hear him slam the door and he'd leave. But when my uncles came to visit, my mother had...